Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Christopher Brown and a bath-turned-deep-sea adventure. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 341 of the podcast with Christopher Brown. Chris used to have a webcomic called Marlowe, in which a pit bull mix adventured in and out of different situations and circumstances. One such adventure is making its picture book debut in the book known simply as Marlowe. It's a near-wordless adventure into the deepest depths of the ocean, in order to reunite with a rubber ducky. And I'm completely entranced by Christopher's art and play with scale. Your readers will have so much fun with this one. Here's episode number 341 of the podcast with Christopher Brown. Welcome to the podcast, Christopher Brown. I'm so glad you're joining me tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
The person that I know we both are already thanking, but to say her name into the ether is Alessandra Balzer. Because Alessandra, every once in a while, sends me a stack of books, and quite often I'm like, oh my word, this is the greatest book I've ever seen. And that happened to be your book in that recent round, and I loved that she shared Marlowe with me. And more importantly for me, I love that she shares without giving me any context at all. Just like, here's a box. Here's some stuff that we have coming out.
That's a great way to do it.
It's neat because I fall hard for books that I make good connections with. And yours in particular, I thought was just tapping into so many cool things. So thank you for making this beautiful picture book, Marlowe, your debut. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And I'm going to stop talking for a second to let you share with the people listening, what is this picture book, Marlowe?
Okay, so at its very core, Marlowe is like, it's a tribute to the imagination. But the actual story is, Marlowe is a dog, he hates taking baths, and at the very beginning of the story, he is forced to take a bath. But the only thing that makes it all right is his rubber ducky. But then very suddenly, Marlowe's imagination gets the better of him, and this huge wave sweeps in and knocks Rubber Ducky out of the bathtub and into the ocean below him. And it's, the story is an underwater adventure of Marlowe soaring through different landscapes and in search of Ducky. And it's, there's a seek and find element where on every spread there, the duck is hidden. So the reader has to look through a detailed rich illustration and find the duck.
It's such a beautiful journey into that imagination too, because that's where we lose sight of all the words. The words disappear, and it just becomes these beautiful, full spread illustrations of, well, really the fun thing to explore in the ocean, which is the way things get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
I really love too, though, upon reading it a couple times, I was like, wait, is it the Marlowe hates baths period? Or does he hate baths because whenever he takes a bath,
He loses rubber ducky and has to like go into the depths of the ocean trying to recover it. So there was something really fun about, I think in particular, the way I read it that way, because of Marlo's face, the right. smirk on Marlo's face, maybe the indifference on Marlo's face, the entire story.
Was it's just... definitely an indifference. Yeah.
Oh, it was the best.
Oh, that's great. And you know, it's funny, that indifference. So Marlo is a real dog. He's my dog. He's a 10-year-old pit bull mix. And that indifference is, it's definitely there. It's real. And that's actually what led me to create a character around him, was just trying to sit there and looking at Marlo and being like, what is he thinking right now? What is he, you know, what does he care about? Where is his mind? So that definitely kind of spun into something much bigger.
Yes. Now you posted these sketches of Marlo for some time, right? It was over, I want to say over a year or two, but I might be wrong about that. I thought it was several years.
Yeah, it's almost 3 years, actually.
Hey, how about it?
Yeah. I did not expect that.
You started and it just happened. Well, these are dogs, though. Those of us that love dogs know that they just sort of are this constant, I don't know, inspiration, companionship. I mean, look, you're not only with this dog all the time, but you're drawing him as well. This is great.
Right. Yeah. Well, it started before the comic, the web comic that I was posting for 3 years. It started literally just me sitting there in my living room and watching Marlo. And, you know, like I said before, trying to figure out where he was in his mind and sketching that. And after, I don't know how long it took, maybe a little under a year of doing that, it came to the point where I had a fully formed character in my head, and that needed an outlet. And right about the same time, I was, you know, really feeling this urge, like, I really need to step up my illustration game. I need to put myself out there. I want to just, you know, try these different techniques and see what happens. And so I basically kind of posed this webcomic as a challenge to myself, where I knew the only way I was going to do it was, I couldn't hold a deadline for myself, but if I had other people out there waiting for this comic on a weekly basis, I'd have to do it. And sure enough, that was probably the only thing that kept me going on a weekly basis for 3 years.
Having the expectation of others, the unspoken expectation of others. I know
that's right.
I always have to remind myself, even with this podcast, that like people will forgive me if I miss a date, but I feel like an obligation. You're listening. So I want to make sure I'm continually providing, much like you're saying, you're reading this comic. I want to make sure I continue to feed that interest.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how much of this picture book derived from Marlo's adventures in your webcomic? Because I would assume whatever content this connects with would have been taken down at the launch of the book.
Right. Well, so the actual story, that was never part of the webcomic.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, so the webcomic, I mean, if you look back in the, you know, the archives, I'm all over the place. And that's, you know, that's what I was aiming for, basically, was it was everything from like one panel, you know, kind of like Far Side, like one single visual gag to, you know, occasionally it would be multiple weeks in a row, you know, I'd be telling a story. And also, you know, I was playing around with different mediums, you know, trying, you know, watercolor and oil pastels and, you know, colored pencils. Because of that, because I was all over the place, you know, I covered a lot of ground. And, you know, Marlo, part of the character is he's an inventor. And that doesn't play into this book, the first book, but it definitely plays into the second book, which we can talk about later. But I think that sense of adventure and kind of just like zany situations that are, you know, Marlo kind of finds himself in, that is definitely at the core of this book. Marlo kind of just being swept up into an adventure.
I think that the place that you take readers in this book, in that adventure, in the way that Marlo in so many ways underwater is just observing and traveling through the underwater to get to his duck, I think is something that I can see carried through. I know your other, some of the other comics that you've shared before online, but to see those qualities in Marlo as well here in a single story, that pursuit of one object, to be focused on one thing. Mm. I mean, how much is that like your young readers too? That one focal point that the whole world can be sort of going out of hand and become even more threatening around you, but you're focused on this one task, this one objective.
That's right. That's a great way to put it. Because I definitely think I see that in myself as well, which is interesting because I didn't think of that when I was putting the story together. But now that you bring that up, I definitely see some of myself in that. But I also like the point that, you know, the younger readers are, can relate to that as well.
I love, as a librarian, one of my favorite things with wordless picture books is having the children read them to me, like tell mm-hmm. me what is happening, what they're observing. Because that's how I find out all the things that you've hidden in your books, because right. the kids see stuff that I don't see.
Right.
But it's neat to see the way that they're reading, that visual literacy, the way that they can articulate visual literacy. And you, Christopher, do such a beautiful job in this book of playing with scale and the positioning of Marlowe. He's not ever just center of the page over and over and over. Instead, we're seeing a lot of this choreographing of these characters, of these settings, and as well as Marlowe and his eye line to the his sight line, I mean, to the rubber duck. I should just say, jumping in, interrupting myself.
Sure.
I'm sort of obsessed with the way you draw stingrays. That's weird, right, for me to say that? But that was the one thing where I'm like, I need to draw stingrays this way. And so looking at your art got me doodling and drawing stingrays all over my notes and all over my, like, I'm covered with papers and notepads around sure. my desk here, and I'm drawing stingrays because you showed me a new way to draw stingrays, and I like that it's three triangles in a line, and I can break down things like that, and that's yeah. neat to see, to be observing that way. I don't know, there's a lot here for the eye to look at and to take its time with, so the detail doesn't go unnoticed, Christopher.
Well, thank you. And first of all, I think that was one of the best compliments I've ever gotten, in terms of just completely out of nowhere, inspiring you to draw stingrays. I like that.
I'm telling you, who knows what these kids, I mean, I always love when I see the children read books and then they make up their own mini comics or mini books that yeah. are derivatives. I have lots and lots of pigeon derivatives. From Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus that we see in our library, or Captain Underpants derivatives, things like that. That's a thing that kids do. And when we as teachers are blessed enough to get to see them do it and make that connection, it's neat to be able to see that you, this author, wherever in the world you are, made this thing that ended up in our library, that connected with a reader in so much of a way that he or she wanted to create from it. That's such a really magical thing, and that's not something I take for granted.
Oh, that's a great point. Thank you. You know, going back to just detail-rich illustrations, I mean, that was definitely, I think that might have been like one of the original driving forces when I was first thinking up a Marlowe book. You know, because as a kid, as a young reader, when I was always drawn to books that were, you know, incredibly detail rich. And I think, you know, my parents would read to me every night. But I think when I picked up books, even if they were, you know, filled with words, I would ignore the story and I would just, you know, lose myself in the illustrations. So, you know, I definitely wanted to harness that, you know, with the Marlowe book and really, you know, try to, I guess, pay it forward in a way, right? Like to carry that on and hopefully inspire a bunch of kids with all these different details that they could pore over.
Oh my word. There are Easter eggs in this book that my son caught, that I only caught the second or third reading, that will end up being everything for some of these kids, because the ownership that they will find over finding the Santa Claus hat, for
right.
example, things like that are going to be things that they will pore over and will drive them back to reading the book over and over. And I like knowing your sensibility of doing this webcomic regularly and just your illustration sensibility. I like that page turn after page turn, you're giving us something that we want to stay with. Something that, like, I think about, like, oh, what pictures from the book could I share on Instagram or on this blog post that we're doing, or on, for in particular for me, with this episode, when this episode launches, what art to include. And it's one of those really amazing conundrums of, well, every spread is amazing. And also, every spread is mine right now. You haven't seen it. I know that secret that lies after that next page turn. And that is something really spectacular, too. And I think that that, for me, is where the scale became such a big deal. When it felt like Marlowe was so small on the page that you know, my thumb could cover him up, or smaller than that.
Right.
And that the other creatures that were taking up the page, or the environment taking up the page, was just overwhelming compared to his size. That was something that, I don't know, I sort of can't let that go, I suppose, as I'm hearing myself.
Right.
That those worlds are worlds that I wanted to inhabit. And so, knowing that there's another Marlowe book in the works, or maybe 5 or 10 more Marlowe books if we're lucky.
We can hope.
Yeah. We can hope. A Netflix series of Marlowe. if I maybe just talk things out, it'll happen, right?
Please do. Keep going.
Please do. Keep going. it's cool though, Christopher. There's this. So do you mind if I draw a comparison to another book? Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah,
so
go for it.
There's this graphic novel I'm obsessed with that I feel like you may be aware of, or if not, it's sort of a spiritual companion to Marlowe because of the creativity involved in the world building that you did to make this book. And that is the Hilda series by Luke Pearson.
Oh yeah. You know what? I actually just started reading that a few months ago.
Okay.
And I love it. I love it.
So Hilda has these amazing worlds in it and is totally being adapted into a Netflix animated show.
That's right.
But to know that, to know out of respect to you, that you've created an idea that can lend itself to more, I wanted to make sure that I expressed that clearly to you, that that's not something that I see, or I think many readers see often, that there's just so much more to Marlowe. We only see Marlowe literally getting into a bathtub and then this crazy world and then ending up back in a bathtub. We know nothing of what's outside of the bathroom, of what's in this house, of what's in his world.
Right.
Other than his world is the rubber ducky. And that allows so much space for the reader to continue your story and to be thinking of more things for Marlowe to be involved in. And that, I think, requires incredible restraint on your part to not tell all of the story in one go, but to save so much of it. I think that, for me, is what is so resonant about this book and what makes it so special to me.
Oh, thank you. I mean, that's, wow, that's really nice to hear. And, you know, I love the idea because I think this is something that, again, I was trying to tap into when I was creating the story, especially the illustrations, once the kind of the framework of the story was in place. I really wanted to hint at, you know, there being worlds beyond the, you know, the page.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's one specific book that I was obsessed with when I was a kid, and that was Virginia Lee Burton's Life Story. Mm. And I was a little nerd when I was a kid. Still am. But I wanted to read all about evolution. But those illustrations, I would literally just, well, not literally, but I would fall into, you know, as a little kid. And because, you know, there was so much like kind of like vibrant, dynamic, you know, energy to the illustrations to begin with. But then the way that Burton would draw them, you know, there would be a hill in the distance and you could see a little path going up that hill. And you knew that there was something back there. And I wanted so badly to, like, you know, just step into that illustration and go explore. So that is definitely something that, you know, I really wanted to capture with this book and also the second book. So, you know, I'm glad to hear you say that because I wasn't, you know, I felt like, yeah, I got it. But, you know, I still feel like I'm not quite there yet. A third Marlowe book, I'll have it. That's a promise.
Just stick with me, you guys.
That's right.
Well, what a great reference to draw from with Virginia Lee Burton and I know exactly what you mean. Those small details that hint at, as an illustrator, I know that there's more here to this world, and I can't show it all to you now, but I'm going to leave a clue here just so you know that I know, and it becomes a thing that you share with your reader. That's a cool thing, man. Hey, what's going on with book two then? We've got, this book comes out, by the time this podcast launches, it'll be out in the wild. But then you've got a second one that I assume it by this point you must be like finishing up art or something like that, right?
It is. It's pretty much wrapped up.
Oh, cool. Congratulations.
Yeah.
You're totally working on book three. This is wonderful.
Oh, I could hope.
You must be at the top of your game right now.
Yeah, exactly.
With paths going up hills. No, I'm sorry, but I digress. Please tell me, book two.
So book two, it's wrapped up. It's still, so I pretty much did all like the edits to the interior artwork, and the cover's done. So there might be a few things that have to be tweaked, but for the most part, it's in the bag. So that's crazy. It's crazy because like the first book isn't even out yet.
I was just gonna say, you haven't had your book birthday yet.
That's right.
A thing, and yet the second book is done.
It's done.
Oh wow.
And this one, it's, you know, near and dear to, you know, my younger self. It's dinosaurs. So Marlo finds himself in the world of the dinosaurs.
Excellent. So, well, yeah. Enjoy dinosaurs for now, because that book is still yours. But Marlo, as I'm holding it now, is about to become the belonging of many, many, many children.
I can't wait.
And oh man, I can't wait just to hear about, I'll have to check back with you and hear about, as you're doing school visits, the way that you share this book with children and their reaction to it. I've read, as I said, I read many wordless books with my students, and I love like an Aaron Becker's Journey trilogy, the way I don't have to say anything, but
right.
The children just, They are so tall. It's like the greatest read aloud because they talk through the entire thing and they narrate the story. And for you as an author and illustrator, storyteller, to be able to be in front of children, not filling that blank space with words, but instead just allowing them to fill that space and you getting to be the recipient of that. That's amazing.
Oh, that's going to be fun. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah.
I got a hint of that when, one of our friends came over with her 2-year-old daughter a few weeks ago, and her daughter, I mean, it's a little under the age range for this book, but she was officially the first kid to read the book, with her mom, of course. And it was so cool to sit back and just watch her react to, you know, every time the page turned, to see her eyes widen, see her point out, she was calling every single fish Nemo. So, you know, I find that slapping. it was just amazing to watch her just, you know, react to the book. It was the first time I'd ever seen that, so it was like, yes, okay.
Nailed it. That's right.
Yeah.
What's
that?
I was just gonna say, the experience that you have as an illustrator in the way that you work sort of in isolation, or at least in isolation from your readers for that those great vast amount of time, it's great that you have that chance then to connect personally with the child and know, you know, be the receive that affirmation that it worked. It was right. My compass is leading me the right direction.
Right. Exactly. Because I'm new to this. I'm new to this whole world. And, you know, I felt good and confident about what I had created. But, you know, that was the true test, you know. will kids actually be interested in it? So that was nice.
So you're new to being a published author, but you're not new to working in books, right? Did I read that you're an art director somewhere up there in New York?
That's right. So, but it has nothing to do with the publishing world. I'm an art director at NYU, and I oversee the design team that creates most of their marketing material for undergraduate students. So very different than the
that
children's.
Would be very different. Yeah.
Yeah,
you're sort of the one that helps to make sure that. Look what a great experience you're getting at NYU. Doesn't the place look pretty? And doesn't it look like we're like brilliant people learning? Whenever I get my papers from my university, from my alma mater, I'm always like, look what a great school that was. Look how smart everyone is. It feels awesome.
Yeah. It's like a pep rally. Every single piece we put out is a pep rally.
We are learning out on the grass. This is amazing.
That's right. I mean, it's actually that there's definitely like a cheesy look, not to go too far away from children's books, but there's a cheesy look to a lot of admissions pieces where you have like a group of students who obviously don't know each other. You know, they were brought together for that photo shoot and then they're made to look like friends. They're sitting out there on the grass. I mean, that drives me crazy. That's one of my pet peeves. So whenever we do a photo shoot, I really try to avoid that. Yeah.
I always get the, because I get the magazine now that is like, you're all graduated. So let's see what all of you are up to. I always get the like, photo spreads of one of us really hard at work in the field. You're teaching really hard, or you're marine biology-ing really hard. I'm really focused on this. And I love that because this is what we do. We're passionate about what we do. And, you know, I think you see that translated into not only the art direction that you're doing with NYU, but also into your picture books. So that's, it's good. It's a good balance to have that focus and, that eye for things everywhere. It's good.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and also I think like trying to really, you know your audience, even though they're completely different audiences between NYU and the picture books, obviously, but, you know, you really want to try to get into their head to create something that they will respond to.
Yeah, but, you know, you stay working with NYU, Christopher, and the thing will happen that one of those NYU students that's in education or in art or in something is going to connect with your picture book. And suddenly the two worlds are going to overlap Venn diagram style.
And what happens then? Giant explosion.
Who knows? Yeah. The clouds open up and that Monty Python finger of God comes down and like high fives you or something. I don't know.
Perfect. I hope so. I can only hope. Okay, it's a lifelong goal.
No doubt. So I have another question regarding Marlowe and how Marlowe got to be published. As a person that reads a lot of web comics and graphic novels in general, and also now as a person that's starting to see web comics get published, which is awesome.
Yeah.
How did Marlowe get to be a book published by Balzer and Bray?
Well, it's a one of those small world situations, and also it's a true testament to the power of social media. I had a site. Oh, I still have it, a site for the comic, and I was also posting it to Facebook. An old high school friend reached out to me, who I hadn't heard from her in a long time. Reached out to me and said, "I've been following the comic. Have you ever considered doing a Marlowe book? I work for here," and she left a link, and it turns out she is a children's book agent. So I was like,
oh, cool.
I was not considering it, but yeah, I'll definitely consider it now. It's just purely because, we knew each other at one point, and then Facebook just happened to show one of my comics that, she happened to work for, an agency, that we found each other again. And so this is Elena, and she has been, from that point forward, she has been amazing in terms of really just kind of helping me go from, one panel comics, weekly comics, to a full book. You know, she was there every step of the way, kind of helping me, figure that out. There was another version of a book, a Marlowe book out there that I was trying so hard to make work. But it was one of those creative situations where it just got out of my control. It started to become a story that I was not trying to make. Mm-hmm. And we both tried to correct it at first. And then, Elena was fantastic. She just called one day and said, "You know what? I think we need to start from scratch." And I'm sure she was really nervous to tell me that because we had been working on it for a little while. And I felt so relieved because deep down, I knew that it just wasn't working. And the minute she said to just cut it, I was like, "Yes, thank you."
Okay. The permission from someone else to speak out the thoughts that were in your head—that's
yeah.
Remind me of Elena's last name.
So I know her as Elena Mecklen. That's who she was before she was married. But her name is Elena Giovinazzo.
I've met her at SCBWI.
Oh yeah.
I was with Alessandra. And she was like, oh, here, you should meet Elena. She's the one that published your book, and she represents also Joseph Kepler.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, of Beyond the Pond fame, I'm sure, among many other people she represents. But that's a neat connection to hear that. To hear that you never know who's watching. Just
that's
keep
right.
keep doing your art. Keep whatever your art is. Just do it and do it with passion, and people will notice. As long as you share, as long as you're willing to share it places.
Right. You know, and it's also, I think, it shows that, you know, you know, as a creative person, you always have to just be working at something, you know, because it's keeping that forward momentum. And I really do feel like if I had been doing that on my own, I would have just kind of sputtered out at some point. But, you know, having Elena there to kind of just kind of egg me on, you know, and believe in me, that really paid off. And because once she told me to cut that first book and just let that one go, the second, well, so the current book, the one that's being published, that kind of came flooding in very quickly. So, you know, it was a frustrating process to try to get that first book idea together, but it was definitely a learning process. You know, there's no way that the book that's being published would have ever come together if I hadn't experienced that first kind of disastrous attempt at creating a book.
Yeah. How long were you doing the two-part question? How long were you doing the webcomic before Elena reached out? And then how long did you keep it up posting new comics before you sort of stopped to focus on this book?
So I think if I'm remembering correctly, she reached out maybe about a year into the comic.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So I already had like a good number of comics under my belt, and then I went on for another 2 years, and I'm glad I did, because I think I really needed that for myself to just kind of keep exploring in those following 2 years. But I then decided, you know, after those 2 years that I really, well, total of 3 years, that I had to stop and really just kind of focus in on the Marlowe book, you know, that because it's, you know, they're simple comics, but, you know, they do take up time on a weekly basis. So I really needed that time to focus on the book, and it helped. It definitely helped.
Well, I'm glad that, I mean, I could see that working on Marlowe while you were working on book ideas would help to just exercise that character and try to mine out what story was trying to be told. That's so cool to hear that. You had a book that wasn't working, it wasn't working, it wasn't working, and to ditch the entire thing and just start anew was the step you needed, your creativity needed, the muse needed to be able to tell that story. It's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. I love hearing about people's creative process, because it's always an interesting story. You know, it's never straightforward.
But it's something that you continue to, you know, to understand that relationship with yourself throughout the creative process. So
yeah,
right on.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah. Also, it makes for an amazing story to be like, yeah, kids, I was working on this one draft forever and it was terrible. I mean, I liked it, but I couldn't get it to work. And then I ditched the entire thing and a new story, just like, voila.
Yeah.
Just the notion of how sometimes it's okay to abandon ideas.
Yeah.
It feels very freeing. So maybe I should end with you that way, just to say, as you go into these schools, as a teacher saying this to you, I hope that you're able to communicate that that sense of wonder through your illustration, but also that sense of being able to let go and allow the story to take root the way that it needs to. I can't wait for kids to connect with you that way. You're a wonderful guy, Christopher, and I love your book. I love your book.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on to talk. Before I let you go, I am going to give you last word for readers. I'm going to talk about my readers, but I certainly mean this to be all readers everywhere, those that haven't discovered you yet and those that are about to. So I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message can I bring to them from you?
I would tell them to never stop daydreaming, to kind of fully embrace, you know, that world of inspiration that daydreaming creates, and to realize that even the smallest of things that are around you, when you're daydreaming, they can grow into really exciting stories, like a rubber ducky, for instance. And I think, you know, one thing that I find really fascinating, and I would hope that, you know, passing this on to them, that their favorite books, every single story of theirs that they love and that they hold close to them, started in someone's imagination. So I think that's just a really powerful message to pass on to your class, your children.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Laura Amy Schlitz shares The Princess and the Crocodile, a hilarious new early chapter book illustrated by Brian Floca. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.